Think you know how to party? Well, science does. In fact, there are nerds out there that spend their whole lives researching the ins and outs of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But don't take this nerd's word for it. In the Party Science Podcast, we break down the research behind a good time and a great time.
I'm Dr. Joel Rindelob, a real-life scientific researcher.
And I'm comedian Courtney Dawson, a real-life party girl.
And together, we talk to world experts in psychedelics.
Look at topics like the physiology of squirting and show you how science parties harder than you thought possible.
Stay tuned every Wednesday for a new episode scientifically proven to rock your dome.
This is a Frank Podcast.
On this episode of Honest to Who, I have none other than North City Rizzy Rizvan. If you, the cool thing about this potty is that a lot of people don't know about this man, but you're about to get educated and wholesomely educated. This man is an entrepreneur slash rapper slash producer. He's got so many slashes, he might as well be Wolverine. Rizzy is a community leader. He loves helping others, and he just goes through what he thinks when it comes to development. He develops himself in a way that's very unique, and he never shies away from his culture. Get in it with Honest to Who and Rizvan. All right. Thanks, Dogo. Fefe hake.
Say best, bro.
Look at me, eh? Look at me, bro. International.
Bro, gotta, bro. Gotta bring that indigenous language awareness into the,
somebody's gonna
into
do
the
it.
Atmosphere, bro.
I know, man. I was like, it's funny, eh? Like being at teaching and stuff like that. Bro, you can't neglect that stuff. Even if those kids are, if there's no Tongans at your school, you still got to represent.
Yeah, representation is important, man. And I think, yeah.
Bro, I've been waiting to have a good sit down with you, Rizzy. Yo. Okay, because, bro, I got to be honest, like all of your stuff that I've, since I've been, we've kind of, what's the word? We've missed each other's trains. We've passed each other quite a lot. And we've had very similar stories. But then, like, sharing that with you, and you'll be like, oh, I did that too. Mm. And it's that's why I was like, oh, I've got to get my bro Rizzy on.
Mm. Oh, bro, thank you. It's an honor to come and just chop it up with you, bro, because I see what you've been doing in the community, on you know, on socials, and I think, like, yeah, just being inspiring, just seeing your ambition and your drive.
I think, like, community, and it's great that you brought that up. Like, like community-wise, people like you are like, there's not many people that are, oh, there are, but it's hard to find. People that put community first over everything. And also, like, you know, it's the needs of many outweighs the needs of few. Where does that come from with you? Is that growing up thing? Is it the village mentality of Tonga?
Yeah. I think it's a fusion of a couple of things. Part of it is, yeah, growing up in the village and just having that communal mindset, just to help each other, you know, like help to build. But also just experiences growing up as a youngin and understanding the importance of having a mentor or just having people in your corner to help boost you up, you know, help empower you through life, especially for the youngins.
Yeah.
You know, the rangatahi who are going through it and still trying to find their feet, trying to figure out who they are. They're the ones that probably need the most help. And I knew that when I was at that age, between 13 and whatever, to my 20s, I was needing some guidance, and I had that. I was lucky to have that. And I was kind of going in the wrong direction for a bit, and then got pulled back by some older cousins who knew better.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I'm just trying to, yeah.
Yeah. How long were you in Tonga for? Like, did you were born there?
Yeah, I was born there. I came here when I was around 10.
Oh, wow.
10, 11. So I spent, yeah, the first decade on the island.
And totally just Tongan? Like,
yeah, well, eventually I went to English speaking school to try to learn the language. But we had, you know, come to New Zealand, gone to America just to visit family.
Yeah.
So we had those experiences, but yeah, it was still a culture shock to come here and go to school here.
That's what I was going to say. Did you come straight over to North Shore? Or?
Yeah. But we started at Northcote. So the first time, and Northcote, for those who don't know, is like, there's a large Polynesian population. There's a lot of Tongans there. Mainly state housing, but then from Glenfield we moved over, from Northcote we moved over to Glenfield where my dad's family were. And then when I started school, that's when I was like,
what the hell's going on? Yeah, because that's what I wanted to ask. Like, coming from just speaking Tongan, and that's all it is, to coming to a New Zealand school, because during, I'm not going to guess the age, like, I'm not going to guess when it was.
Back in those days.
Back in the 70s?
Back in the 2000s.
2000s, sorry. But you know what I mean? Like, the diversity in schools and the acknowledgement of other cultures was not a thing. Like, it wasn't the same with me, because I was speaking Māori. Like, I was, I was brought up in at a marae with my auntie, with my aunties and my nana, right? And then I came up to South Auckland, and there was nothing.
Different.
Yeah, and it was my mum that was the person that was like, we need more of this in there.
Yeah.
I was very lucky for that. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, what about for you, bro? Because that would have been a culture shock.
Yeah, I think coming here, my thoughts, my perspective or perception of New Zealand was in Aotearoa is the land of the Māori. Like, as a kid, I just thought, oh yeah, that's where the Māori are. They're like me. But I got here, and when I started primary, I was like, bro, there's like two brown people in my year.
I was lied like, to.
Wow, what's going on? I just didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know the history, and I didn't understand coming from the island. So I think there was a lot of adjusting to do, and I don't think I really adjusted until I was into my late 20s. Not just the school system and the people, but it was just my mindset, like, I feel like as a young in that situation, I was overcompensating myself because I saw heaps of stereotypes through movies, Police 10/7, things like that. And I'm like I'm the representation of that people in my area. And it's like predominantly Pākehā. And I'm like extra, hey guys.
Oh, you had to go over the top.
Man. Oh, all good. I'm not going to rob you. I'm not going to steal, you know, like, so I had to unlearn that for ages because I was like, bro, that's not me.
When did you realize that though?
Very ages. It took many conversations around the tānoa, the cover bowl, just talks with cousins, others who had the similar experience. We had to like code switch.
Yeah.
Regularly,
well, a lot of us
on the daily.
I do it all the time.
Yeah. But I think as a youngin, it starts to settle in, and then you think that's your norm. And then you're like, bro, this ain't even me. Like,
you know, it's funny you bring that up. Because a lot of our brothers that go over to Australia, you know, when they come back and they've been there for like 3 months and you come back and they start, oh, hey, mate, how's it going, lad?
Yeah.
I think it like, and this is what I've been told, is that happens because they kind of mock it. They're like just trying to fit in.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, yeah, mate, cheer. And then all of a sudden it just slowly creeps in, and that's how they speak. But it was that's interesting.
I think, I mean, any environment that you put into, whether it's a workplace where the tradie talk, I see my you know, the youngins that I work with, as soon as they get into that, the way that they speak changes. The language, the slangs, jail. You go into jail, first time, whatever, the language they pick up. I work in youth justice. The kids that come in, some of them aren't even there through the courts, or they're just there waiting for placement in a home. So they haven't committed any crimes. They're just there waiting for placement. But you can see the change because of the environment. Yeah. Whatever environment you go into, you absorb everything, the language, culture, and so whether you're in Australia, New Zealand, or America, I see my cousins in the States. They're literally like gang members. They just absorb everything that's happening around, you know, their environment, and that's all they know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like there's a saying, like, you're always a product of your environment, right?
100%.
And I think some of our young people and some of our rangatahi, you know, because we'll get into this because we both worked in youth justice and I was at Kōrewai Manaaki for a little while, but I was at Whakataka Pōkai, which is the care and protection unit, which is the younger ones when I was there.
Yeah.
And man, some of the things I would see, and I would, like, when I first started there, right, it was like, I was like, man, stuff these kids, da 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 da, because I didn't know any other way.
Yeah.
And then I started realizing it's not their fault.
Yeah.
And I think somebody like you that understands that, you know, it's an eye-opening experience working at places like that.
Yeah.
When was the first time when you were like, wow, this is different?
The first time I walked in there, maybe about 6-7 years ago, I went there to run a holiday program. But, you know, I've never been inside, and I've never been into YJ, youth justice. So it was like it was a shock to see what it's like in there. It's like, I thought instantly it was like a mini jail. And then I was on the same state of mind because those kids been through so many challenges. I didn't find out till later, you know, the backgrounds that they've come from. And the you know, how fragile they were from the upbringing. Yeah. And I was just instantly judging, like, bro, what these,
yeah,
bro, these guys are bringing up, bro. Yeah.
This guy needs a hiding. And it's always this one, this guy needs a hiding.
Bro, hiding, bro. You can tell this guy's never got a hiding. But that might be it. They've been getting hidings all their life.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly
the environments they come from. So, like you said, it's not their fault. It's they're a product of their environment and the things that I've come up with. And I think that once you understand that and get over your own, like, because I'm projecting my anger and like how I feel they should be behaving,
yeah.
I'm like, bro, these kids need so much love, yeah, and care and affection and attention that you have to get over yourself first to be able to be in that space, because it's not an easy place to, you know. But I think with the work that I'm doing, is it's little, it's like these little incremental shifts in their, the way that they see their environment and then the way they see themselves.
Mm.
So I help them create music, rap, write.
Yeah, can we go into that for a little bit? What is your, like, what how do you help these young people?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of help, but I see it as just a creative outlet. So we got a program called Rap and Rec, which is rap and record, and it's just a space for them to write about their lives and then, you know, start rapping. And I think just my own experience with music, I've been able to do that. And when I first got there, the staff were like, okay, guys, no swearing, no talking about your cases, we don't want to hear none of that. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But I was like, in the environment that they're in, if that's all they can talk about and you're just shutting that down, what are they going to talk about?
Yeah.
You know, because they're there at the moment and it's on the surface. So I had to fight for that, for them to be able to express themselves explicitly, yeah, even though no one wanted to hear it. But from that, it was like, after this, it's like, maybe we could write a, you know, who's out there on the outside that can, that's always had your back, that's got love for you. Like, let's write, let them know how you're doing in here, you know, just give a shout out to the fams. And it'll be like, oh, yeah, my uncle or, oh, my auntie or my nan took care of me. Oh, yeah, I'll write to them. And then slowly you start building that rapport and that relationship, just like in life. Like, you gotta build some trust. You can't just come and, yeah, straight into the deep end. You're like, you know, you got to, you know, paddle on the surface a little bit before you get into the deeper side.
There's plenty of people that come in and think that,
they're going, like, to save the world.
They come in and they're like, yeah, nah, whatever I say, they'll listen to.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I noticed with our youth too, like, especially in those facilities, is that, you know, they're clicked on, man. And if you're not there to help them and vice versa, let them help you, then it's like a nah, bolt.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they lock up. It's a boundary that they're like, nah, mate, I don't trust you. Because they haven't had a lot of people to trust in their life.
Yeah.
Or they've trusted and have stabbed them in the back or something like that, you know?
They've always let them down or something. Yeah. But their BS radar is really on. Like, they can just tell if you're fronting, if you're faking it. Like, if you're real, they'll sense it. But their radar is on. And I think you just got to be as genuine as you can, you know, when you're in those spaces, because these kids are sensitive. They've been through a lot and there's not a lot of trust. So you got to build that first. And I've been lucky enough to have come with the experience I have been as a youngin' and see that with them and just slowly build and let them express themselves, whether they're talking about ram raids, whether they're talking about high speeds, like, that's their life. Like,
yeah,
what are you going to do? Like, let's talk about that and then dig a little bit deeper. And then, you know, and some of the boys, I've been with them for like 5, 6 plus years, and they're in the free programs on the outs. Once they've been released or they've come out, they're with us. They're still with us. They're still creating. And I think, it's beautiful to see the progress.
It's how important is it, not just for kids, but anybody, to have an outlet where they can just be creative or just do something, you know?
I think some of us don't understand how important it is. And creative doesn't mean like rapping, singing, or like drawing on it. Sometimes it's just going for a walk, like nature, like you see the beauty in nature. And I think that, you know, we get so busy and so caught up in life and work and bills and relationships and the roles that we hold. But that's like, as a dad or as a youth worker, we're not just stuck in those categories. There's so many things that we can do, but I think we get caught up in the rat race that we forget that we just need time to be out there and go hug a tree, bro. Like, go hang out at the park, go walk up the Moonga, like, go for a swim at the beach. That's creative. Mm-hmm. Like, and those are outlets that we some people minimize how important that is. And for us, I think the Indigenous world, you know, we really view that as something that's crucial to our, you know, human progress. But in Western society, it's like, make that money, man. Like, pay those bills.
Get in that rat race.
Oh, hard. So it's hard. Well, our young'uns still confused. They're like, oh, so what is it? What am I supposed to be doing? And it's hard because some of the parents, and, you know, we got to forgive the parents, but parents only know what they know until they know better. So, you know, they're trying to learn as they go as well. So it's, you know, it's always a work in progress, but we got to be open and receptive to like the learning and people making mistakes.
What do you think about coming back to your mahi, like the institutionalization of our young people? And I know this is a deep, this, you can go as deep as you want, but that's what I noticed. I noticed that we'd have kids in, and kids will be there for 9 months. Mm. You know, oh, sorry, 9 weeks.
Yeah.
They'll come back 2 weeks later because they just didn't know. It's a structure.
Yeah.
But what's your take on that, brother?
I think it comes back to identity, trying to figure out who you are, especially at those that age, like from 13 to 18 and even more. But it's, they don't, some of these kids don't know who they are, whether it's like their family or their ethnicity or their culture or where they're from. They're just kind of floating. And there's nothing to anchor them or to ground them.
Yeah.
And so that's all they know. The system is all they know. Like no one has shown them better. Like there hasn't been a better blueprint or framework or a role model that's shown, bro, you could do this or you could try that or here's another way. And I think it, so when I was working at Youth Justice, Korowai Manaaki, and I think this is off my head, I might be wrong, but it's like a 46 bed or 40 something bed facility. And probably like 38 to 40 of that is Māori. Yeah. And I'm just like, this goes back all the way back because some of those kids, their parents are across the road at the adult prison.
Yeah.
And they're talking about their granddad that's been inside too. And, you know, so I was like, bro, this is generational. Like, this goes back to Te Tiriti, like all the way back, the disadvantage that has happened, you know, like the whole colonization period, the whole coming through and trying to wipe the culture away, the language, all of those things. We see ram raids and high speeds and violence and alcohol abuse and blah. But when you trace it back, bro, this goes right back. And people are like, nah, it's not. It's like, bro, it is. You can see that. You can see it's still happening. These are the symptoms or the effects of that. And it's generations later, but the kids are still forgetting. Like, how do those youngins, how can they find their feet when their parents haven't or their grandparents haven't, you know? So they need so much help. And I look at the school system because the kids are like, man, we don't want to hear school. Even just some of the history about our people, that's not being shared in the classroom, you know? Like, all we hear about is like Columbus or like Napoleon. Like, bro, who are these people? But we don't hear our history about Maui or like Sione, the navigator, or like Hape. You know, like, these are people that's part of our lineage. And like, I know that that would empower our youngins. So they're trying to find their way still, you know? They're out there floating and we need to find a way to anchor them. And to me, it's, as a Tongan, I'm like, I'm reaching out to the Tongan kids, like, where's your parents from? You know, like, this is your village. Oh, this is what happened to your village, the chief or the king, and just showing like history and to empower. And I think it's just, yeah, it takes a lot of work, but I think just little bit, bit by bit.
Because they say like, you know, if you cut somebody, you know, it's going to leave a scar, right?
Mm.
And that's what they kind of say is like, if you trace it all the way back in anybody's lineage, you go back, there's a scar, and it's and it will continue on through the generations, and it opens back up when there's no healing. And I don't think if we go to Te Tiriti, and you know, like, it goes back, like when I was at school,
yeah,
bro, we learned about the treaty. That's all we learned about.
Yeah, yeah,
that's it. That's, we just learned about that. You learn about that. Oh, yep, February's finished. Let's move on, something else.
Yeah,
but. You know, like, I didn't get in trouble, but I got like, you know, like, I got a lot of, because I was a teacher, I got a lot of raised eyebrows when I'm teaching. No, this is actually what happened. Like, this is the real, and here is the proof.
Yep.
And here, and you know, it's not like what I said, here's what academics said, and here's what this said. And you know, like, when you're teaching older kids, like intermediate age, you know, it needs to be there. But it's, and this is where I think me and you kind of, this is what I admire with you. Cause I see, like, I kind of love, I try to exhibit the same action, is that if I see a problem, instead of being part of the problem, I'll try and be part of the solution or figure a solution out. And when you see these young people that need help, especially in the Tongan community, instead of just going, And those Tonga kids need to sort their shit out. Mm. And then, okay, on to the next. I got to go to work.
Yeah.
You're actively trying and putting your skill of and music and just talking and being able to understand in action. And that, for me, is the reason why, I've told you this here. I put you above I have a lot of high regard for you, bro.
Yeah, so let's appreciate it. But I think that's the beauty of today, like the times that we have now with the access to the information. People like you who are pushing knowledge and like especially like cultural and indigenous knowledge and showing the other side. Because back in the days, it was just one way. It was not a dictatorship, but it was just like it, now it's an even playing field in terms of information. You can go out and do your own research. You can Google things. You can go and read about and find and have access to this information. But before, we were just being drip fed the stuff and instructed, and you know. So now I feel like with the young people, they have access to this information, and people like us who are in the community are trying to show another light. I think that's it's a massive move, you know, moving forward. But in terms of what you were just, I just want to go back to what you're saying about seeing a problem and trying to be part of the solution. I think that's been a long journey for me in terms of like assertiveness or the concept of the bystander effect.
Yes.
I stood there for many things growing up and just watched because I was waiting for someone else to jump in. And I just thought, who am I to butt in, or who am I to step in? But I think now it's just like, man, if you see something, do it. Like, you know, if you feel you can help, jump in there, you know. And I'm working on being more assertive with that and being more, I don't know, confident in myself that I have the ability or capacity to jump in and do something. Even if it's just saying something, because I see the young people around me and I see my sons around me and they're looking at me and I'm role model. I'm going back to even like the young kids who have that framework or blueprint on how to be, how to carry yourself. And if I'm not confident in myself, I'm going to pass that on. But if 100. I start working on it and be more assertive and say, hey, bro, you can't, this is my own personal experience. A couple of weeks ago, someone kept parking on my grass. They were working next door, tradies.
Yeah.
The first time it happened, I was like, whose car is that? What are you up to? Like,
yeah.
I don't know who that is. They're parking on my grass. And I was like, oh, must be those guys fixing next door. And I was just like, oh, okay. Next day, same thing happened. I was like, maybe I should tell them to, don't make a fuss. You know, you might be the scary islander trying to, you know, the angry Tongan. I don't want to be there. You know, I was doing the overcompensating thing again. And I was kind of like minimizing myself. And I was like, man, my son's watching me the way I carry myself. And he's like, whose car is that? Mm-hmm. And I think, man, if I had to keep letting this go, this guy's going to come into my house and make a cup of tea. And I'm just going to be like, oh, it's all good. Like, I'm not just, you know, I don't want to be an angry Tongan. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to start being more assertive, I have to practice at some point, like better start now. And so the third day I had parked on the grass to show don't park here. The man just came and parked right behind me and squeezed in. And I was like, okay, if I let it go to like day five, I might be just, I need to, you know, nip it at the bud now while I'm still at level three. And try. I mean, this is me in practice. You know,
that's
a new thing. So
you're exhibiting behaviors that you know your son could see and go, okay, Dad has shown me what to do. Okay, I'm excited for the climax for the story, bro.
Yeah, please. It's nothing too exciting.
Because
I jumped in the car and I was like, let it go, like, bro, just relax. Like, it's just. But then I thought, man, I need to be assertive. I don't want to be a doormat, and I want to learn how to articulate my emotions because I'm a bit angry at this. But if I left it, it'll get a bit physical maybe because that's all I understand. Like, that's how we communicate anger. It's like, bro, I don't want to talk. I just want to. And so when I just went around the corner, I was shaking. I started heating up and I was like, bro, is that you parked on the grass? And he was just like, he looked at the other van and he was like, oh no, this is me here. And I was like, who gave you guys permission to park on the grass? And he was just like, No, we're over here. We're just here for the house trying to renovate. And I was like, bro, can you go ask whoever it is to park on the grass to move? And I saw the other guy whose car it was popped his head out. And that made me more angry. I could feel bro, the audacity. And I was like, bro, I want to go shopping. When I come back, I hope you guys are gone.
Boom.
And I left and I was like I was sitting in the car. I was like, well, my hands were like, you know, like, bro, I just want frustration, anger. But I'm glad that I hit it where it was, because if I keep leaving it, which I've done most of my life, so, you know, I might stub my toe somewhere and whoever's around me is going to get the wrath.
Yeah.
But that's not the wrath from stubbing my toe. It's the wrath from someone parking on my car, stressed from work, and I haven't regulated myself, you know? So I'm just like, I'm working on that. So in terms of like seeing the issue and seeing the problem, I'm still trying to practice that.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But I think the main thing from what you talked about just then is those teachable moments for your kids to see.
Mm.
You know, you've taught, and people neglect those sometimes.
Yep.
They just go, someone's parked on my lawn. You know, like I got to talk it out. But they don't know those eyes that are watching.
Yeah,
those kids, your kids, you know, your sons and your sons and your daughters, or your nephews and nieces.
Yeah.
And even like older people, your older brothers, older sisters. It's not a thing, but when they're looking and they see you react in a way that's conducive to everything. Yep. It's not just, I'm just going to throw a rock. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's powerful, man. I always remember, like, you know, and I'm not saying this to get any clout or anything, but, you know, the bros that sit outside of the countdown and want something to eat and want, or at the squeegees, whenever, Brian, and another pet peeve of mine, don't fuck a camera. Don't
video everything.
Don't video that shit. Come on now.
Yeah.
So, but my video cameras are my kids.
Yeah.
Because I want them to see.
Yeah.
I want them to see. Dad's a good dude, man. Like, he just went in there and bought a whole chicken for this dude because he's hungry. And I don't talk about it. I don't go, hey, kids, guess what? Look, did you see what Dad did?
Yeah.
I'm just like, no. And I get to the car. All right, let's go home. And they see it.
Yeah.
And then I hope, I pray one day when they're old enough, they'll be able to exhibit that behavior. Because, I mean, our kids are just mirrors of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's their role modeling right there, you know? Like, just seeing the people around you and even not just from elders, but your peers. Like you look at the people that you carry around you or you keep around you, what characteristics do they hold? You know, what values and morals do they carry? Like that, you mirror that too, you know? So if you're hanging around a bunch of thugs, you're going to have to be a thug, you know? Like, if you know, so I think like with our kids and the young people who are around us, the way that we carry ourselves is so important. And I think I try to keep that in mind because, you know, we're not perfect, you know, and things will slip and slide. But I think it's owning the fact that it's always a work in progress. I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm trying to learn. This is a learning journey, you know? I'm still walking. So walking alongside them and never putting yourself above or below. It's just like, bro, we all learning here.
And it's so powerful though to understand that you're learning.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that just think, I don't want to say they know it all, but have think that, oh yeah, I'm at this point in my life. I don't need to keep progressing.
Yeah, I got that sus, bro.
Don't worry, man. Don't worry.
Stress about it.
Someone on my grasp, bro. Don't worry. I got this. But at the same time, being able to go, let's see, open your mind so much to just go, okay, I need to get better.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I clicked onto that, man, until like maybe like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When I was just like, I know everything. I know everything. But now I'm like, you get bored when you don't. I get bored when I don't learn something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to get better at whatever I am.
Yeah.
And I think with you and your journey in music, it kind of was like that because I would hear your name everywhere. I would hear that you helped with this, you did this, but I never like, there was not a body of work that was Rizzy's, right? It was not a Rizvan, oh, this is where you can catch him.
Yeah.
But every time you'd get onto something, you'd know who you are and the esteem that people have for you. Like your reputation, I think, in the rap industry in New Zealand, from what I stand, what I've heard, your reputation is the upholding dude that helps everybody, brings everybody up, and, you know, like, and it's part of being the solution, not part of the problem. Because Diggy's an inch, you know, Diggy Dupay's you know, anything he does, he's always shouting you out.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, brother.
Shout out to Diggy too. I think I've just been blessed to be put in these situations. And I think what we talk about being receptive and being open, I think just people I've come across paths with, I think I'm learning how to read signs or see signs or, you know, recognize the tohus that I've been presented. Like when I connect with someone, it's like, bro, just be yourself as genuine as you can. And I think that doors will open or opportunities will happen and blessings will come as long as you keep it real and be yourself. And so like meeting Diggy, like, that was random. But we just built off that and I just kept it 100 with me, and I saw that he kept it 100 too, and I think we just built and developed. And similar to you, what you, when you were helping others, you don't film that, you don't document it and show it for clout. You just do, you know? And I think that that's why people are like, man, I keep hearing, I always hear it too. Like, man, I've heard your name a lot, but I don't know who you are. Like, people keep mentioning your name.
I remember going to, somewhere, it was a sneaker thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, because I knew of you, but I didn't know who, like, there was no face to who you were, right? And I remember it was in town, and I was just like, oh, you're Rizwan. Shit. Oh, man. And then we linked up and we had a good chat. But because I could sense energies.
Yeah.
You know, do you do that quite a lot with people that you work with?
Yeah. Yeah. Energy is massive. And I think we all have got to trust our gut and our instinct. And, you know, we've been built a certain way. We've been through so many experiences. Use that to gauge the energy around us. And I think the most important thing for me is like, being able to recognize dangerous energy or energy that you don't want to be around. Because sometimes, I mean, life's too short, man. You want to be hanging around that. But at the same time, you know, my album is called Everything Happens for a Reason. That's what I've been standing by for the last few years, that in hindsight, in retrospect, you're going to look back. In the time, you might not understand why this happened, why I missed that flight, why I didn't hang with him, why I broke up with her. You might not get it in the time, but when you look back, you'll go, oh, okay. And it's like, everything happens for a reason. You just got to trust in the universe and God, if you believe in God, that everything's going to be all good. You might be going through some tunnels. Some of those tunnels might be long, but there's always a light at the end if you hang on, you know? And I think for me, it's just, based around my own energy, my own learnings, the people I keep around me. And I feel like the energy you give out is the energy you'll get back. If I was to walk down the street, who is going to come towards me? Some dudes who are on the same wavelength, who are on the same frequency of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, let's go.
But if I just be you, if you want their happiness, share the happiness. Like, hey, what's up, dog? Hey, how are you, bro?
You're so right.
And
about that.
You'll get that same energy back. But you see those boys that are at the back against the wall in the club, staunching everybody out? The same energy is going to come back to them because they're going to attract the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think, you're right. Like, energy is massive, and you just got to be aware and, you know, be open to different energies, but at the same time, protect your own.
How did you realize that around energies? How old were you, or when did that happen? Do you remember if there was a time where you were just like, actually, I think I might be the problem? No, I'm not saying that you were, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. So as a young'un, and it's funny because in life you go through different changes and you morph and you grow. We had come from Tonga, and within a year, my cousin is murdered. And I'm just about to go into my last year of intermediate and moving into high school. My high school years, when you talk to the people that knew me in high school, I was like the staunch as, you know, like fear tough dude in my school. But that's because I was coming out of my cousin being killed.
Mm.
And I was like, no one's going to touch my family again. No one's going to hurt my brothers. No one's going to hurt any of my cousins anymore. And so I just put up this guard, and I went through that for ages. And I didn't realize it till I was in my 30s where I looked back and I was like, why was I like that?
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. Why would I want? Because once high school finished, that all broke and I became this joker. But it's realizing like those traits that you carry. But, you know, if you had someone that guided you and let you know, like, oh, that's why these things are happening. That's why your behaviors are like that. Or that's why you hold these certain characteristics because of this. Because everything happens for a reason and everything has an effect or a side effect. So you just got to, I don't know, you just got to be aware, you know, of how you walk and how you talk.
Did that realization help you when you started working with youth at Youth Justice? Because you were part of that,
Yes, 100%. And when I said I was getting a bit of trouble in my teens. It was right in the smack bang middle of high school. Mm. Like, school just wasn't my thing. Like, I shouldn't have even been there the last 2 years. I didn't do anything. But I started
hanging with the wrong... That was me too, bro. I just went there to have some lunch and play basketball. That's what I was there for.
Yeah, I was just there to have my lunch and have other people's lunch too.
Yeah.
But, shout out to my boys. They supported me through that.
What, did you go to Northcote?
Nah, I went to Glenfield.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a small school over there. Shout out to GC. I was lying and say I went to Westlake because Westlake's the only school that everybody knows on that side. But yeah, I think it was just, it's, you know, it's always, everything's learning, eh? Everything's learning. And when I look back at who I was back then, I think that you could look at your past and be ashamed or be embarrassed or be like, oh my God, and cringe. But take those lessons, take those learnings and work with it, you know, like try to help develop something better. Cause that's what I'm trying to do. You know, that's, and it's what I tell the youngins that I'm working with now, like, very, I went down a similar path to you, but it's all good. You got heaps of time. You know, we're still a work in progress. You're still on your journey. Just keep working at it. Like there's better things ahead of you if you choose to.
Well, just like on your album, you know, everything happens for a reason. Because I think that time in your life, do you think if that didn't happen, you would be a youth worker?
No.
See what I'm saying? Yeah.
I think, yeah. And I think I had the mentors during that time once I finished high school that showed me like, bro, why do you think you're tough? Yeah. It's cousins, it's love. But they're like, bro, why are you, you know? And then they started role modeling. You can be a man and still show affection or show emotion. So I was blessed to have those older cousins who I used to see as these tough, like, gang dudes or, you know, they were just men. They were, to me, they was like, oh, that's what a man looks like. But they were showing me, like, hugging and, you know, talking, having deeper, meaningful conversations with the other bros and having this deeper fellowship with the other men around me, like the other boys who are older. And I was so blessed to have that. And I try to you know, do the same behaviors or show the same characteristics with the boys around me or the other men around me. And even just, you know, conversation with Wahine. In high school, because I was there staunch, girls used to be like, are you not interested? And I saw like, you know, why are you too cool? You know, but for me, it was like, I didn't know how to talk to girls at that time. I was still trying to learn, but the role modeling and the blueprint that was set for me was from these cousins. And that's part of the person that I am today. And that's what I try to show the youngins, you know?
Without that role modeling with your older cousins and stuff, do you feel that you, like, the path you would have gone down would have been so different right now?
Oh, definitely. 100%. I owe them a lot. And I tell them a lot of times, just, man, if it wasn't for you guys, I don't think I'd be the person I am today, including the learnings and the teachings of my parents. Mm. My parents are awesome, but, you know, they only knew what they knew. And there's some things that they can cover a lot of bases, but there'll be things, you'll be slipping through some of the holes and trying to find things for yourself, and you won't find it at home. You might find it somewhere else. So, yeah, to them, and even just the religious background that I was brought up. And so I was born into a religion called the Baha'i Faith.
Oh, wow.
That's where my name comes from. Yeah, so Rizwan is a Baha'i name.
Oh, wow.
People think it's like a tag or like a hit or a rap name, but no, that's my real, that's my name. So I was born into the religion of the Baha'i Faith, and some of the principles is like unity and diversity, equality of men and women. The world is but one country and mankind as citizens. Like, it's a real inclusive faith. And so I was raised in a lot of, with a lot of those principles, but also just being able to be exposed and interact with other ethnicities, because it's not a Tongan church. It's not a Baalangi thing. It's like, we had Filipinos, we had heaps of Persians.
Because, I mean, like, with the Baha'i Faith, and can you educate me on this, please? It's huge in the islands, eh?
Mm.
Like, it's quite massive. So in Samoa, it's got a big following?
They got a temple over in Samoa. I don't think, I mean, numbers-wise, it's not that big, but I think it's just, I think the coverage, like, who would think there's some, you know, like, there'd be anything other than Christianity in the islands? Mm. But I was born into it. Like, I'm old. And, like, people are like, man, how did the Baha'i Faith in Tonga? Like, what? What is that? You know, so.
It's quite, I don't want to say popular, but it is it's a huge thing in the islands.
Yeah, it's been a thing, and I think, some people gravitate towards it because of the inclusivity coming from a lot of the Christian denominations in Tonga. There's a blur between culture and religion and the churches. And I think some people get a bit, you know, oh man, that's way too much. That's not how I understand the Bible, or, you know, there's a lot of drama and complications. So some people come to the faith, to the Baha'i Faith, and they're like, oh, similar, but different. And that works for me and my family. So so they come to that, and I think it's an interesting paper. And
What have you learnt? Like, because you know, with the in the Bible, that was like about you know, like community, because it is a very community based faith, right?
Yeah,
and it's all about, and it kind of like, because I didn't know that you were Baha'i, and but now it's starting to all make sense.
For it's how it unpacks.
I can kind of get, not just that, but just the way you're, because I had a question around patience, right, coming up in my head. Because I'm like, you know, you know, with your music, you know, you're very, and I'll say this because I, you know, from things, you're very patient, like, because there's a lot of things that you were contributing to that was, you know, doing well. But now it all makes sense, because in the Baha'i faith, I don't know a lot about it, but I do know that it is about doing what's best for the community and for the people next to you, right? Which is exactly what you have been exhibiting for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the definitions of patience, is just helping others and putting others first, in a way. But it's just, I feel like it's just happened the way that, God's plan. Like, it's just happened the way that it's unfolded, the way it's supposed to unfold. But I'm just being blessed to connect with certain people. And I've been waiting to have my turn. And I feel like I've needed the time to work on myself first. And blessed to be connected with these other people and their journeys. But I also needed that time to work on me, because I've been through a lot in the last year. The last year has been like the hardest and the best year of my life, and I've had so much growth. And those close to me would know, like, they'll see the changes and the improvements and the learnings. But the patience comes with, for me, it's just I trust in God, and I trust in the universe that things will happen the way they do. And even though I sometimes say that life is short, at the same time, it's like being intentional with the time that you do have here. And for me, I've been able to, you know, help others on their journey, and just, for me, it's just jamming with them, bro. Like, spending the time. That's it. I'm not doing any actual help. Like, bro, this is a, you know, I don't have a ladder to help them step up anywhere. I was just being there with them, doing what they're doing. There's no, like, strategies or anything that Rizzy brings to, I was just being there in the room with them, or in the garage, or in the studio, just hanging out, jamming, having these conversations. That's it. That's all I've been doing. I don't want people to think that I've been like marketing plan or strategies to help people.
But it's just that. I don't think anybody would think that with you. But yeah, you're so right. They say, like, there's this new kind of quote thing that I've been going through in my head, is that like, the best ability to have is availability and being available for people that you love. And that's what I've really been, I think once I unlock that, I can't, that's not my bar, by the way. I don't know where I got that from, but you know what I mean? If I'm available for people that I love the most, and I'm ready to, you know, give as much as I can, then, you know, God or the universe or whatever will pay me back when it's ready. And I think that's what you're talking about.
100%. Yeah. I think that's where I've been at. And I think, That's a part of it. The other part is I've been doing a lot of self-care and like work on myself in terms of how I see myself, which is massive. And which is another reason why I was like thinking about coming to connect with you here, because I actually hit you up like last year, I think, to do a bakery run. And I was like, you know, like, obviously I know a bit about pies.
Hey.
But for me, that's how I saw myself, because like, it was, I don't know, just perspective and the way that I viewed myself was different to how I view myself today.
Wow.
And I think a lot of that had to do with me looking at my past, letting my past dictate where I'm headed or who I am, looking at my past, who I was to who I am, but then who I want to be, like looking into the future. And I want to be confident, you know, like I want to love myself. I want to be able to look in the mirror and be like, yo, not just physically, but even just mentally, and, you know, like have integrity, have these qualities that I feel like I admire in other people. I want to hold that. Mm. I want to carry that. So I've had a tough year, but I've sat down and written some goals out, financial goals, physical goals, you know, like career, but I put a character goals.
Wow.
Part of it was just, I want to be a man of my word. I want to have integrity, like, bro, catch up soon.
Yeah.
Bro, we'll link soon.
Yeah.
Right, that's the biggest build up.
I know.
You shouldn't even say that anymore because people just, that's an automatic cancel.
Like, so I think I've done that. Like, not that. I think I had to change my mindset around that last year because, like I was saying, the availability of things, right? And now I say to people, if you need me, I'll say, this is not an empty promise. Yeah. If you need me, you just tell me.
Reach out.
Yeah. And I only say it to certain people.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things like, you know, because it's fucking, it's so empty when you go, bro, if you need help, let me know.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they won't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Bro, I'm continually, and you could, I always hit you up every month or two. Hey, bro, checking in. How are you, my bro?
Yeah.
And it's that conversation without expectation coming back. It's not like, how, bro, how's it going? Gee, what are you up to on Saturday? Can you help me move house? Like, no. That's a different conversation. Mm. It's just keeping lines open.
Yeah.
And there's no like financial or wanting to get a kickback somewhere.
Expectations.
No, there's none. It's just like, and bro, the same thing. I love hanging with you and I love the energy that me and you have. Mm. So I'm keeping those lines as open as I can. And anything I had, I was like, yeah, bro, like let's link up here. Let's do this. And and a lot of people, and I think a lot of people just in general, just in life, if you reach out to someone, they automatically think, what does this guy want?
Yeah.
What does he want from me?
Yeah.
When's this kicking going to happen?
Yeah.
But when you don't do it, they get a bit shocked. Like, oh, and then the paranoia hits. Oh, surely you want something. Nah, man, I just want to make sure my bro that I have a lot of time for and a lot of energy for, just want to make sure they're okay.
100%. You know? There's empty promises. I think part of that is a cultural thing, the learned behavior that we're just so used to offering things.
You're right.
But when you recognize that I need to dial it back, I need to step back and relax and just have time for me, you got to learn to put out those boundaries, which is what I'm learning how to do now, which is like, oh, sorry, bro, I can't do it this weekend. Like maybe next week or another time, but not, you know, that's hard, man, to say no to others. And I think that's what I've learned this year is being able to, when I talk about assertiveness, part of that is that being assertive for myself. Like, bro, I need to relax this weekend. Like I've had a tough week at Mahi, you know, I need to chill. Cause ultimately that helps you to be able to regulate those emotions, you know? When you do stub your toe, you can like regulate, breathe then instead of holding on to it, bottling it all up and then eventually lashing out. But I've been able to do that this year, focus on myself, not in a selfish way, but just giving myself the love and attention that I needed that I've been trying to give to others. Cause I think you become a better version of yourself for those around you. And for me, like my boys, and just the team that I keep. And I think that's being able to give me so much more clarity moving forward. Still learning, still, you know, still trying to walk, but I'm getting there, you know.
Rizzy, you seem to me, and you know, like I know you a lot, but not so much. But you seem to me like you know, like in terms of circles, like friends of circles, like you're a welcoming dude, bro. Like whoever wants this help, you're like, cool. Is it important to like boundaries to keep those tight with the circle of people that you have around you? Or is there certain tiers? Or is there these people I will do so much? Because you just seem such like a giving guy. And, you know, like I'm a giving guy too, but I've had to learn like sometimes you got to hone it back a bit, you know? Not you, but I'm saying for me. Yeah.
I think I'm getting there. I think I'm getting there and I'm just being just careful of the energy that I do put out because I just recently or a few months ago, I realized that I kind of overstepped the boundaries of help and they became dependent on the help. Mm. And then they started asking for more like money that I didn't have. And I was just like, oh, bro, I could come scoop you up and do this. But, you know, but I started compensating my own, you know, compromising my own plans and my own goals to do that. And I think that's what set me off on the goal thing. And part of their goal, the character goal is, you know, man of my word, but also protecting my energy and myself for me, but also for my kids, you know, so that anything outside in the community and the mahi and just music, I don't bring that back home because I didn't regulate, because I've been over spreading myself thin out there. And then when it comes to going home, it's like, shh, bro, I'm tired, you know, like, bro, this is where you should be spending the most energy, you know, the most time investing in the your loved ones. And it's hard. Because you think, oh man, I don't want to be stingy or like be that snobby dude out there. But I think at the same time, like, you'll learn. And and the universe and God will let you know. Because when you've done too much time out there and things aren't going right at home, bro, refocus. Yeah. Be able to recognize that and, you know.
I think I'm at a crossroads like that at the moment with my personal stuff, you know, like, yeah, reset. Reset's always important, man. Yep. Like, yeah. I want to give you a tip. I'm going to give you a strategy that I've had to use, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm probably outing myself. I'm probably dry snitching on myself for doing this, okay? Because, you know, like, I get asked to do quite a lot of things.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are for free. And I'll do it because it's, like, cool.
Yeah.
But I caught myself slipping a lot because I was like, yeah, sweet, sweet, sweet. I've got to get myself out there, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So what I this is what I would do now, and bro, anybody listening to this, you could probably do this as well. When somebody asks you to do something, ask them to get back to you in a month, okay, on the day. So you say, like, I'd be asked, hey, bro, could you come and do my podcast? And I'll, if I'm not busy, I'll be like, yeah, bro, sweet ass. But I say, bro, can you, like, get back to me on, like, February the 4th or the 5th? Then I'll wait to them. And if they get back to me on the date, then I'll do it. Because that's telling them, that's telling me that they care enough to go, oh, okay, I'll better text them then. Yeah, I'll let them
know. They made the effort.
But if they didn't and they forget about it, then I'm like, oh, well, I mustn't have been that high up on the priority list.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been doing that just with ones that I'm a bit like, you know, I can't go too all the time. But if I know you and I believe in you and you need some help, of course I'll be like, yeah, sweet. But it's these ones that I don't really know that well. And, you know, it could be anything. Could be, hey, bro, could you, you know, like, hey, could you come to my school? And I'll be like, yeah, of course. School's a bit different. But yeah, it's just, that's something that I did.
That's cool. That's a cool method to help protect yourself. Because
these people, if they actually wanted you and they were like, yo, like, is it possible, please?
Yeah.
And they say, hey, can you, or it doesn't have to be a month, it could be next week. Hey, can you hit me up next week Thursday and I'll see how I'm going?
Yeah.
And if they do it, then it's like, sweet. And if they don't, then it's like, okay, I kind of, all right then.
Yeah.
Let you know.
Bro, that's funny because I just posted up a story yesterday on Instagram because someone that I haven't seen in like 2-3 years or have heard from, they just hit me up, but you know, it wasn't even the favor they were asking. It was more the fact that he asked. Oh, explosing.
Oh, wow. Don't worry,
let's throw it out there.
Don't cut this out, all right? Keep this in. I need this to be
They straight away, the first thing was like, bro, you reckon you could share my last post, my latest post? And then it was a couple of other things like, bro, I saw you on Diggy's story, bro, cracked it. And then it was like a few lines down and it was like, man, long time, man. How you been? And I was just like, bro, like that just, I usually don't mind. Like I didn't share that sort of stuff or screenshot, but I was just, it just, I was pissed off.
Bro, you're talking to the man about this one. I know exactly what you're talking about. Here's one. Here's my story about that one. I know it's your podcast, but I'm just over here giving my stories.
Okay.
Bro, I had a school bully.
Yeah.
And he was the biggest bully and he bullied everyone. Right. He hits me out. It's the most broken English. He's a Māori fella. He was all goods, but it was all like, you know, you for you and capital D with an at symbol. Yeah, yeah. It was like
old school Texas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was almost like he's on Text 2000 on Text Weekend. And I was like, how did he do this? It's a Friday night. He goes, and I had to, it took me a while. And it was like, gee, get me on Bakery Run. Me, and he goes, me, you, and Kanoa. And I was like,
not the request.
And he's like, we'll go to Clendon. And then in my head, I was like, what the hell is this, man? It took me like ages to like read it first and foremost. And then I was very lucky. I got to go on the project and I pulled it up for Kanoa. And I was like, Kanoa, man, I've got this request from my bully. If you can have a look at this. And she was trying to read it. She was like, I don't have a clue what this hell says. I can see my name's got an at, got two ats in it.
Got the hat for the ats. Yeah, the ats.
And I was just like, oh man. And she's like, does he not know how to use commas? And I was like, I don't know, but you know, if you're keen, we can do it. With him though. But you know, like it's, but yeah, people sometimes, you know, hey, when they see somebody kind of rising, they're like, hey, yo, and that's all right. But at the same time, show some, Show some
form, man.
But it's at the same time, it's the same as you. It's like the rapport. Like when you're building rapport with your kids or with young people, it's the same thing with adults.
Yeah.
You can't just go in and like, hey, bro, can you share my things?
Yeah. Okay, but if he asked how I was, if that fourth line was first, like if he asked how I was doing, I would have considered it. I was like, oh, bro, I'm good. And then, oh, bro, can you share? Oh, yeah, man, all good. But he went straight to the, bro, can you share my latest post? Because like, I was like, bro, the audacity of this man.
Is this the same when people ask you for beats, bro, to be honest?
Bro. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't charge for music. Like, that's the thing. Like, I just vibe. If I can vibe and jam with whatever it is, like the project I'm working on, a beat or like a feature for someone, if I'm into it and I'm vibing with it, I'll do something on it. But if I can't, I'll just, bro, sorry, man, I couldn't come up with anything. Or, you know, my creativity's a bit off this week. But, yeah, but the favors, it's starting to hit me. So I had to cut that one off and practice my assertiveness straight away.
There you go.
And be like, bro,
can't do it.
Sorry, brother, man. I'm a bit busy. I got with all the things that are going on around the world and my mahi wrapping up. I gotta focus my stories on this and my own music. And I just got the scene, and I was just like, oh yeah, unblock. I mean, block.
Do you feel like saying that? Like I feel a bit. Sometimes I feel stink having to give excuses for not wanting to do stuff. You know, I if it's family, I get it. Like, but if it's just random people, and I'm like, you're kind of out of line for asking them this, but I'll justify why I can't do it first.
Yeah.
But in actuality, I'm just like, damn, bro, like you come out of nowhere on this one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I look at a lot of people around me, and I think as part of it is your upbringing, and I think like just having that, I don't know, the aroha for others, and you're always trying to serve and give. But I've seen. And a lot of bosses that I've met through life, they're cutthroat. They just don't have that. And they're just like, no, no, no. And it's pros and cons for both.
Yeah.
But I see the advantage of just being straight and going, nah, bro.
Especially when the product is at stake.
Yeah.
Like the product, if you having to say no will make the product better,
yeah.
or you having to say, hey, sorry, we can't get you, we're not going to get you on.
Yeah.
If it's the product, then I totally understand.
Yeah.
If it's like an album and you're like, hey, like we're only going to get you on for this, or hey, we might not have you on for a feature,
yeah.
whatever. If that's what your vision for the product is,
yeah.
then I totally understand that.
Yeah.
I think I'm more around that.
Yeah.
And he can't, you know, like, and there's no two, there's no wrong way.
Yeah.
But it's when you're so focused on a product, and that's what it brings me to my next point about your album, right?
Mm.
How long did this album take from start to finish, with the product being the end?
I think it's been over a year where I've just been chopping away at it and experimenting with different beats and different concepts for songs. But I think it's been a work in progress in the last 5 years, just the whole idea of putting a proper album out. Everything that I've done to this point has been like short little projects, just little EPs and features of other people. But I think I'm at a point where I feel confident enough to release a full album. And the whole idea of everything happens for a reason. Most of the songs, they're all real reflective. Like I don't think there's any bangers like for radio, but it's more like a journal that people can sit down and listen to and help them to reflect and internalize some of the things that's going on. And hopefully they can resonate with some of the topics and the subjects. But for me, it's, you know, it's just been life, you know, the experiences, the ups and downs, being able to recognize the signs, being able to articulate where I'm at in life, and being able to share your experiences or the learnings of those in a language or in a way that people can understand.
Mm.
I think some of the subject matter is pretty heavy, but the way that I rap it, the youngins inside, they'll be able to understand what I'm talking about,
wow.
you know? So that's what I'm trying to work towards. But also it's just a timestamp of where I'm at in life. Yeah, been a lot of changes in my life, and I think just a lot of gratitude and gratefulness to be where I'm at, to be able to still stand and be a father and be a musician and be a youth worker. Yeah.
That there's that Rick Rubin says, there's a quote that went around, and it's like, if you're doing it for audience of yourself, you should be the most, like the audience of one, which is you, you know, and don't worry about what the audience thinks.
Yep.
Just as long as you're happy with it and you're, you know, it's from your brain, it's from your creative soul.
Yeah.
You know, have you noticed that's a thing that's happened a lot more now than people that are trying to make a project to get radio play or to get on?
Yeah, I think it's a big shift now, because also without, you know, major labels, and everyone's so independent and doing their own thing, they have creative control of everything. But with the creative control, there's no people around you saying how it should be.
Yeah.
You know, you get to do, you get to market it. You get to just say whatever you want on your track because you're releasing it. No one has a say in what you're creating. But at the same time, I think it's like, it's a big, it's massive. It could be overwhelming when you're like, oh, what does this look like to anybody else? Mm-hmm. But like Rick Rubin says, the journey is to get to the point where you're like, it doesn't matter what anybody else says, you know, this is my truth. Whether you understand it, whether it resonates, this is my truth. And to be able to share something so honest and so real with the world, that's the biggest thing. Because yeah. It comes back to you at the end of the day, like, you know.
Your name's on it.
Yeah, your name's on it. Like, your integrity is there.
Yeah.
You know, I could be out here rapping about the streets if I wanted to, but it won't be me. I'm not in the streets, you know. Like, that's not my life. So I have to be real. I'm a dad. I'm a youth worker. I have these past experiences, but it doesn't define me. Like, I'm using it to improve my life and move forward into a better light, you know? And that's where I'm hoping this project kind of reflects that. And I had heaps of quotes in my head that kept popping up, but I was too scared to share because I might do one of those, you know, blood is thicker than another man's treasure. Like, this is a fusion.
Pause that one. Sheesh.
So I had these quotes that are, the only quote that I do remember that I've been keeping, it comes back to assertiveness. And I think it comes back to, you know, how you view yourself and even just having respect for yourself, which is, the quote is, be careful what you tolerate because you're teaching others how to treat you.
Whew.
And I don't even know where that's from. And I don't even want to botch it.
Just take it. Just say you made it. So that's from the Book of Rizzy. the Book of North City Rizzy right there, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get that sense, like with you and like I interviewed the Movement, which the bro is from the streets.
Yeah.
You know, but he said, like, this is, I don't give a shit what everybody else thinks.
Yeah.
Here's my album. Here's my body of work.
Yeah.
If you get down with it, you get down with it. Yeah. If you don't, ke te pai.
Yeah.
No skin off my nose. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So
that's a cool example to bring too, because I met him early, you know, like years ago. And what he used to talk about in the raps was real. And what he's talking about now is still real, but it's a different shade, you know, to where he's at in his journey and the progress that he's made and the learnings that he's had. Bro, proud of the bro and what he's done. And that's a role model and that's a blueprint for others who are coming through the streets, that you can see that there's a chance for you to change. I mean, you know, there's opportunities there and you can do it. If he can do it, you can do it.
And he's just doing so much for the youth in Australia and New Zealand. It's so cool. But bro, I'm you know, I'm a big fan and I can't wait to get a full body of work from Rizzy. And so I'm looking forward to it, bro.
Sure, brother.
Yeah, and you know me, bro. I'll be dissecting those lyrics and be like, "Hey, brother, what do you mean when you said this?" I think I annoy a lot of the rappers. I think I annoy Spike more than anybody because, like, "Hey, brother, what do you mean when you said like the Iceman, brother, with Michael Jones? Has anybody else done that with Tyson and Iceman, bro?" And he's like, "Yeah, but you know, hey, the nerds know."
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I wanted to come and chat to you. You can only say so much in a rap, you know, and it's just good to have that cordial. Because
Is it freeing to just be like, I don't have to rhyme anymore, I just speak?
Yeah, because I'm a, you know, I've learned to talk. I've learned to try to articulate my thoughts. I mumble a lot, but I think when it comes to the raps, it's limited. Because you have a certain amount of bars, certain amount of like the BPM, you know, beats per minute, you got to fit it in between. But when it comes to just cordial and just letting it flow, you get to really dig into the person, you know. So through management, and that's the other thing. This is my first ever year of having management. Through them, they've been saying like, oh, yeah, when the album drops, we're going to have some concerts and here and there. I told them that I just want to sit on a desk in front on the stage with my laptop, play the music and just talk like this, you know, through each song and go, oh, this is what happened. This is what means, you know, because I feel like as a fan, I want to hear it.
I would love to contribute somehow.
Bro, I would love to me, bro.
Bro, hey, you know that's what, that's the bro's. But if you need me to like moderated and facilitate stuff, please do not hesitate. And it's not one of those empty ones again. It's not one of those, oh, hit me back on March the 3rd. No, I would drop whatever I'm doing because I believe in what you do, and I believe not just on in rap, but just in life. And yeah, if you ever need me, yeah, I'm available.
For sure, brother.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Appreciate it.
Let your management know, eh?
Yeah.
Just to start listening to you. Don't worry about all that stuff. Yeah. Listen to me. Just give me a laptop. Yeah. I'll be your DJ, bro.
I just got to try to finish this album, which I still got a few verses I got to record and flying out to Tonga in a couple of weeks to shoot the video, which is going to be exciting as well. So, yeah.
King. Well, you know, like you talked about, you know, digging and stuff like that, but I'm just so thankful and I'm so like just in awe that you let us dig and get in and understand who you are, bro, as a person for the last hour. So thank you so much, my bro.
Oh, thank you.
And also thank you for what you do for the young people and thank you for the energy. And I don't know if people have done this, but, you know, and when I'm doing these types of things where I have to wrap up and shit like that, I think about like, if I was in your shoes, what would be something that would be really heartfelt for me that somebody said? Mm. And I just want to say thank you for your it's not even your sacrifice, the sacrifices that your family have made for you to put energy, that energy into other people and our youth. Okay, brother? So thank you so much, my bro.
Thank you. It's been an honor. That
boss right there. Boss. All right, but we'll be back on Wednesday. We'll be back for... Goat Busters, bro. I'm going to bring you back in here for Goat Busters, brother. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, my bro.
My bro. Thank you.
Frank Podcast.
Chris and Guy from the Extremely Casual Gamers podcast. We're a casual gaming podcast for the everyday gamer.
We chat everything gaming from PlayStation to Xbox to Nintendo to PC, but not like full-on stuff, like super chill stuff, casual stuff, like, oh, if you had to date a video game character, who would you date?
Even if you're just gaming on your mobile, we want to hang out with you, and we've got awesome giveaways for you to win.
Join us every Thursday for a brand new episode. Just search Extremely Casual Gamers wherever you get your podcasts.